Hello, this is Paige Hattie with CBM Connect and Mobius Institute, and you are listening to part two of our cyber intrusion interview with Howard Penrose.
This issue should be one that you would think would unite everyone in politics, but do you find that to be the case, or does politics pollute this seemingly apolitical subject?
Well, let me put it like this. I occasionally turn on the news for more entertainment than anything else. I've got a slightly different view because being involved in government relations, I'll give you an example. We went to one of our trips to the Hill. We had people drop out of the visit because we were told about all these protests that were going on that could turn violent in Washington, D.C. and all this other. We get there and the streets were deserted. What goes on the news is the stuff that gets people to watch the news to sell advertising.
Mm-hmm.
What we've learned is things like the Perkins Act, basically the bill for career and technical education, has been reauthorized through Congress. And the vote was not divided at all. It was unanimous. It's hung up right now trying to get through the Senate. But it's more, the issues are more related to something else. We're seeing the same thing with cybersecurity. The work in cybersecurity by the government is being managed cautiously. And the reason for that, and it was put succinctly by Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee's assistant, Lily, who's I've been dealing with for some time. And that the government makes a great club, meaning that if you want to smash something, you use that club. But if they were to attempt to put rules and regulations in place surrounding cybersecurity, they would probably do more damage than good. And I've heard that same sentiment echoed by every branch involved, whether it's the NTIA, the Department of Commerce, Homeland Security, White House. Everybody knows that if they sit there and they regulate cybersecurity, there's nothing regulating what happens on the other side. So what they do is they put rules in place for, you know, stuff that impacts infrastructure and our national defense and things that would impact our economy, but they cannot really, without doing damage, regulate things that impact us and our private industry. So they can make recommendations, they can put programs together, they can educate. But really, they know, as do all of us who've had some form of experience with the government, you do want the information, you do want the defense, you do want the other things that they are doing now. I found it interesting that in some of the news organizations, they're just now taking on. Well, this stuff has been going on for decades. The side of cyber warfare and cybersecurity with our government is not something that's recent. I was dealing with it when I was at the University of Illinois Energy Resources Center in '97. We were discussing this issue when we were talking about smart grid networks and communications. As part of IEEE here and when Lucent Technologies was around, and they were part of the lead of the way for that, for the protocols for that, back in 1994 and 95. So, it is very apolitical, meaning there is not disagreement. As a matter of fact, it's one of those areas that we're finding a lot of agreement, regardless of what party's involved. I'll sit in the room with the Department of Homeland Security's Republican representative or the Democrat representative on cybersecurity, and we'll share stories that would raise the hair the back of your neck. I mean, it's just amazing. But really, I'm not seeing it as there is no divide that I'm aware of. There might be some disagreement in wording of some bills,
mm-hmm.
or whether bills are appropriate or not. But really, all sides of the political spectrum are very interested in cybersecurity. They've all been affected. We've seen that. We're seeing it even today.
Yeah.
On the news.
Well, that's positive at least. And yeah. So if you had to pick one, which cybersecurity issue receives the most attention? And then I'd be curious to get your take on which cybersecurity issue doesn't receive attention that maybe should.
Ah, okay. That's an excellent excellent question. There's two things actually that are receiving the most attention, and for very good reasons. One is protecting against phishing emails. So a lot of your in company and even your email servers are doing everything they can to protect people from, they call them phishing, and there's another one called spear phishing emails, which are very directed. The other area is protection against internal cyber attacks. And you'd be amazed to know, I'm sure, that close to half of cyber intrusions, depending on the study you look at, it varies from 40% to 60%, but meaning the average is about half of all attacks and information theft and other issues that impact cybersecurity are actually in-house, meaning that they're launched internally. I expected to see that the number of malicious attempts on that were much lower than they really are, but almost half of that, or about a third of all the attacks, are from our malicious intent, meaning people are siphoning information and sending it out for personal gain of some form or another, or they are disgruntled and want to harm their employer. And there's a growing effort to watch for that as well. So some of the areas that I've seen companies use for the phishing attacks in particular are the false phishing attacks, meaning that IT will hire in a security firm and they'll send out an email. And if you open up that email, then it's actually an invitation to attend the cybersecurity meeting that afternoon or something along those lines, which I think is very educational. The other areas, basically, there's a number of tools that are going in place now I'll use the term, although I'm not in strict agreement with these terms, but machine learning and machine learning systems that are looking at patterns. The employee that downloads a lot of information on the weekends without having a need to, and things like that. Those are tools that are going in place now. 2018 is being seen as a higher area of threat for things like that. The weakest area, and this is supported by every study, every security study going on right now, is Internet of Things. People are not paying attention to proper installation, setting the protocols up in the system, verifying they're getting updates, doing any patching, all of the things surrounding the need for cybersecurity. As a matter of fact, the NTIA, or the Department of Commerce, has a whole program built around, Internet of Things devices and things you should ask your vendor. Some of those include, the issues related to security patches. I think that's the biggest issue right now, is people are not updating their security. So I'm going to read this off. Basically, the reach out went to, or the committee that's related to this, includes white hat and gray hat hackers. Gray hat meaning sometimes they're not always the good guys. Vendors should be able to describe whether a device can receive security updates, describe how the device receives those updates, and then what's the anticipated timeline for the end of security update support. How is the user notified about these updates? What happens when the device no longer receives update support, meaning it becomes obsolete? How does the manufacturer secure the updates or explain how the process is reasonably secure to the end user? And I do not know of any time when I've watched IoT devices being installed where this is a major thing. As a matter of fact, when I was writing that article on cybersecurity, I was sitting in a restaurant and I was doing my draft on paper as I do. And I was listening to two vendors talking about going over to a local company. This is in Texas. And they were talking about how they were going to work with their maintenance prospect on working around IT to get a sample of their product in so that they could show the capabilities of it communicating outward to their company to help them monitor the maintenance of certain maintenance characteristics of a machine. So literally the vendor was talking about how to get past IT or how to convince the customer to bypass their IT in order to put a device that would transmit information out of the company. And it's not the first time I'd experienced that. It was the first time I was aware of it, especially while I was writing an article. So, I'd say the biggest opportunity in these areas tends to be awareness more than anything else. Once I became aware, the landscape became very interesting. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. So I think you just may have even answered my next question for you, which was, in relation to cybersecurity for the individual, what advice do you have for the end user to protect against unwanted intrusions? And I think you just mentioned awareness, which could very well be the solution to that. So what do you think?
Awareness is huge. As a matter of fact, Homeland Security, and we're partnered with them with Society for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals, has the Stop, Think, Connect program, which is all about awareness. It discusses and has you walk through things like an assessment of what your vulnerabilities are as a personal vulnerabilities. It does have application also to manufacturing, commercial businesses, things like that, but it also drops down into the personal because, opening up the wrong email can have catastrophic effects. Things like how to recognize a phishing attack. They're getting far, far more sophisticated. How to make sure that you have the right type of, malware and other security, software security systems in place and that they're normally and regularly scanning. How often to back up your information. How to protect yourself online. When and why to use VPN. I use these techniques a fair amount and sometimes I'll post something, oh yeah, I'm in New York today, but actually I'm already back home. There's things that you can do very easily to protect yourself. And a lot of it's awareness and then updates. I am not a fan of Microsoft 10, Windows 10 and its updates. I've had some bad experiences, but at the same time, I fully understand why they occur. So it's a nuisance more than anything. In a few cases, I think the damage has been worse than if I got hacked. But but it's important. I'll tell you the story about when I was standing up at a Vibration Institute conference when I got the first time that an update knocked out all of my drivers on my laptop.
Oh no.
So I had no presentation. I had no anything else. And luckily my son was with me and he's uh, He's a computer guru.
Mm-hmm.
So that it took him 8 hours to try to get us functional for the next
Wow.
day.
But that's crazy. But I mean, those updates, I mean, so there's the negative side to the updates, but those updates do, I mean, if you don't do an update, then you risk that becoming vulnerable, don't you?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, a lot of the newer, and this is actually very new. I think people are probably not aware of this now, but some of those phishing attacks and malware attacks and bot attacks no longer require somebody to open software or open a website. They're now network-based.
Mm-hmm.
So they hunt for vulnerabilities and sneak in. Which makes it even more interesting. They're expecting this year for those to become even more aggressive. So you don't necessarily need somebody to open an email anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about these primarily are not. In April, they just announced that that there are several nation states. Homeland Security announced this one. There are several nation states that they now have official warning out that they are aggressively attacking individuals as a group and companies in order to cause confusion and economic impact.
Wow.
And that came out within the last month as a notice.
Hmm.
The issues having to do with these new network worms and cloud-based launches and other things that are of concern. Those came out. I think Cisco. I just finished reviewing their report. That report just recently came out, and they're seeing a dramatic rise as 2018 progresses and Internet of Things devices become more prevalent in the home and in businesses. Because people are going through a mad rush to implement these things and not really paying attention to how they're set up or whether or not they have security protocols in place. So they're expecting that, you know, I mean, some of the biggest attacks right now were through something called denial of service, meaning that one method is to throw so much traffic at your server that it takes it down, and I got a chance to suffer one of those through a website. Actually, it was the service that I used was attacked, and they shut down all our websites and contacted us and said, "Oh, your website's got a malware on it," which surprised me because I pay a lot of money for the protection, and they literally deleted the sites and all backups. And then it turned out to be an attack on their server, had nothing to do with the websites.
Wow.
So the knee-jerk reaction was to shut them down. Well, a lot of those things come through what are called botnets. Okay, and a botnet is basically a collection of computers and Internet of Things devices and other things that are connected to the Internet that become part of a network for the aggressors to attack systems. There was a large server farm up in Michigan that had a botnet attack that took them down for several days, and it impacted everything. I think it was Netflix and everything else, if I remember right. Don't quote me on that one. and those all came through security cameras.
Wow.
Insecure security cameras. And how hard is it for these folks to find it? Lily Connie is Sheila Jackson Lee's assistant. She's heavily involved in cybersecurity. In particular, also sits on a lot of IEEE committees, as well as the NIST cybersecurity committees, and has a lot of input into all of that.
Okay.
I think she's been one of our biggest champions on the Hill, most steady champion. Most of the others have turned over a fair number of times, meaning that when we go in each year, we're meeting with different people.
Mm.
the topic's the same, but that's a concern too. Very little consistency in most areas.
Yeah.
But we had talked at the time about, and to continue what I was talking about, a search engine called Shodan.io. Shodan.io, and there's other systems like it, and I think I used an example once, and you have to be cautious when using the search engine. It was originally meant for white hat hackers, meaning that people you would hire to test your systems or even IT to verify that your system is secure, and it literally searches for open, meaning exposed to the internet without security. IoT devices, cameras, wind turbines, SCADA networks, you name it. And what's really particularly interesting about it, first off, it then also gets heavily used by Black Hat. And there's other search engines like it now. I think it cost me like $35 for a life membership. And I've used it to demonstrate a few times. I'll go in, I'll say, okay, let's see, is there a wind turbine nearby or a wind farm nearby or some other system that's open? You pop it up, and sure enough, there a whole bunch show up. If you select one in particular, it'll show the system, it'll show the serial number, it will show all details and a link to the manual. And in a few cases, if they have done nothing about security, I did this for an article. I went in, opened up the system and looked at it and was able to, without taking any steps whatsoever, look at how the machine was operating, what its outputs were and things like that. And I know that if I had even gone further, they had spent so little time on security, probably would have been able to take over the device. The problem with that is that when you have that information in front of you, you have everything, the IP address and the works. When you open up that manual, there's usually a default login and password. And if they have not gone to the extent of securing anything there, you're in. And that, I think, is the scariest thing for a company. And then when you start thinking on the personal side, how many devices at home, especially with smart grid stuff happening, smart meters. At one of my businesses, I had set up the site to be able to have doors unlock and lock remotely, meaning I could be anywhere in the world and lock and unlock the doors, set the temperatures in the space, turn on and off the lighting. Things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, oh, and of course all the security cameras that we have everywhere. And in my place of business, they're not fake. And yes, they are connected. And yes, they are backed up on the cloud. So all of that provides a level of exposure. And I demonstrated that once by pulling out my smartphone and saying, okay, here's the gem, and we're going to turn off the lights. We're going to turn up the temperature, and we're going to lock the doors, and did it all with a set of keystrokes. You can take a look at your home and all of the systems that we've been putting in and the number of vulnerabilities that are seen and sometimes announced on the news or make a single line or two in a newspaper or on an internet blog, hack found in this particular type of home network. So those are things that are of concern, because all of them are avoidable, meaning a person could literally have the updates turned on. What is the default for the device? Are the updates turned off? With their connected to your network, do you have updates turned on? Are you making sure that you're using secure systems? Did you select the setting to make it available to see worldwide, or did you select the privacy setting? Just simple things. But you have to be aware to do it. How many people will take a brand new smart thermometer, install it in their home, and just allow it to run like the old thermometer, not realizing that it's now connected to their Wi-Fi and may either have malware installed in it or maybe a point of intrusion into your Wi-Fi network. Now think on a grander scale, where not a single business that any of the surveys could find knew all of the IoT devices in their companies. And worse, knew which ones were legacy devices that are easily hacked.
So what do you consider to be a legacy device?
Devices that are obsolete, devices that use old protocols that had already been overcome, and devices that are developed by companies that are no longer in existence or no longer support them.
Okay.
So basically, there's a reason why a lot of IT departments, to the chagrin of many maintenance departments, do not allow Bluetooth and Wi-Fi devices to be connected. They prefer wired because it's easier to maintain them from a security standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, maintain the communication.
Yeah.
Wow. But, you know, those are some of the bigger concerns.
Sure. So we've touched on phishing a little bit, and that term certainly kind of rose to prominence during John Podesta's email breach that was going on during the 2016 U.S. presidential election. It sounds like it's fairly prevalent as far as phishing goes. So where are you most likely to be at risk, you know, visiting websites and your own email, you know? What does your experience tell you about that?
Your answer to that is yes.
Everywhere?
Yeah. And well, here's what's particularly interesting. Okay, so in the past, it was easy to detect these phishing attacks. You just looked for spelling errors. So say you got an email supposedly from your internet provider saying, hey, need to log back in and verify your information, and to have a link there that you would click on. And if you had just hovered over it, you would see that the address has nothing to do with that site, right?
Mm-hmm.
You click on that and you've launched it. But what you would do is you'd look and say, okay, they spelt, all kinds of things wrong. It's not a professional communication. Well, now they've become more sophisticated. They actually emulate, or even worse, hijack some of those websites, and will have redirects set up. So you would receive an email, and I see this all the time as a small business owner. I would get emails saying, you know, here's your invoice from, a company I've never should receive an invoice from. And it would be an email attachment like a PDF. Or a zip file. Well, you obviously don't open that, although the curious would, or your accounting people might. Because we're reliant so heavily on the internet, people aren't paying attention to that stuff anymore. So they'll receive legitimate looking emails. Websites, if you don't have security set up for your web browsers, some web browsers are now considered obsolete because they had a lot of security holes in them. There's the drive-by websites, meaning that you see a website in the search engine, you think it's legit, but you don't have this Google security or one of those set up, where Google hadn't caught that one yet, or whatever the search engine is you use. You click on it, you open it up, and as soon as you open up the website, you might see information there, but at the same time, something launches into your system through your browser. Through something like Java or something like that. Or you open up a website that says your Java needs to be updated, and you click here, and you click there, and it launches something. Or now what's worse is ways that these people are getting around problems is that they are they've now included the ability to launch the malware when you close an item. So if you get a phishing attack through say your web browser, so you get a pop-up that doesn't look quite right, and you close it, you're good until you close it. The main thing is, though, the good news is that when you do have the browsers set up correctly, and you do have you know, a good solid security program set up that that it will you know, you'll put that stuff into your websites. I always turn on the ability to identify if a website is trustworthy. So Google, for instance, will say, you know, they'll put a flag up if they think a website has been compromised, or you know, not trustworthy flags. Or if I set it up in my browser, it'll flag the website is not trustworthy and so on. Simply put, avoid them. The challenge is that you get some false positives, but primarily the idea is that you have the ability, once you're aware, to protect yourself to some level. It's going to happen. You will at some point suffer a cyber attack, and then that comes down to your resiliency, meaning do you have a good backup? Have you secured your backup somewhere that's safe? You know, that kind of thing. It's not just from natural disasters, but literally the impact of an attack.
Today, I think this kind of feeds into what you were just saying. So people are getting more involved with cloud services. So is that the safer route to take for as a backup, or are we just opening ourselves up to more vulnerability?
I think at this point we're opening ourselves up, and this is, again, is supported by all of the studies. We're opening ourselves up to different, not necessarily increase. And the security surrounding cloud is basically, I love the cloud. It's going up into the cloud. No, it's going to some server farm somewhere or some shared server farm. The idea behind that is you distribute the information so that it's difficult to access. But it also depends on the security of the cloud network that you're getting involved in. You can have an internal network, which would be a series of your own servers. You can have a network such as, you know, your Apple networks or your Azure networks, which are Microsoft, or your other networks, your Amazon networks, all these things. And literally it comes down to ensuring that the proper security is in place. I believe it was just within the last couple of years that a lot of public figures, movie stars and TV stars, found to their chagrin that their cloud-based photos were all released.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody hacked into the cloud. So you have a weakest point. You have the person who uses password as a password. You have the encryption systems on clouds, which allow for easier transfer of information, meaning that a malicious employee can transfer information to the cloud and be harder to track. You have the ability for organizations, malicious organizations, to use things like Dropbox and some of the other stuff that we all find convenient. Well, that convenience is the ability of the black hats out there to be able to attack. So they can launch malicious code through clouds and so on. By and large, I think the statistic from Cisco is 53%, roughly, when you are doing some type of cloud service, are you looking into the experiences others have had with the cloud? Are you looking into what security systems they have in place? Are they a distributed? Do they own their own server network, or are they leasing from another organization? Because then your security is only good as the weakest point in that system. And worse, the worst part of it, both with IoT and cloud devices, is that nobody's quite sure who's responsible. Is it the vendors, or is it the owner, the user? So until that gets sorted out, you're still going to run into vulnerabilities. So you want to be clear of that up front. And know that when you use, I mean, I don't keep anything critical on, say, a Dropbox. I might use it to send information and so on to somebody, but they already know the information's coming. They know exactly where it's coming from. And then when I get the information I need on a cloud, on a, say, a Dropbox, I get that stuff off and really only leave things on there that I am willing to expose. Now, if I have a secured cloud network, meaning that I am fully aware that it's as secure as it can be, you know, say a private or dedicated cloud system, then I can feel a little more confident in what I put up in place. The challenge has been now that the black hat hackers and black hats basically are focusing more and more on cloud-based systems because most companies are moving to those because it costs less to maintain, you know, you don't have the servers on site to maintain and so on. So our clouds, our cloud networks secure. They're as secure as existing networks are now. As long as you have good security in place, you will be as secure as you can be. And again, it goes back to a word I mentioned when we started all of this, and that's trustworthiness. Are you dealing with a company or an organization or a network that you can trust? And that trustworthiness you have to investigate. There is no standard for confirming whether or not a site is trustworthy. There's frameworks being developed primarily for, you know, as I mentioned early, anything that can impact federal or whatever else, but for personal and everything else, it comes down to who you're dealing with.
Okay. So then is there a quick way for you to summarize maybe a few of the differences between malware, ransomware, and viruses?
A virus is actually just launched on a computer and usually has some type of malicious intent. Malware, ransomware, and denial of service systems usually have the same thing in mind. One of two things. One is financial gain for the organization who's implemented the malware or ransomware by directing you to a site where they can, malware where they can direct you to a site where things can launch, or other actions, or using you as part of a botnet, you know, that kind of thing. Ransomware, they come on, they encrypt your system, and then we'll sell you a decryption code, usually for Bitcoin. Unfortunately, now, starting in 2017, there's ransomware and denial of service attacks that appear to be ransomware and denial of service attacks, but are literally being used for malicious destruction of information, meaning they launch on your system and literally delete things. Or you know, format your drives and things like that. Stuff that happened a long time ago has come back again. What is old is new again, basically. So malware, you don't want that because that will watch your keystrokes, turn your computer into a bot, launching attacks on others that you're unaware of, will take over your email and send out email to people and that will think it's literally you to launch other malware and so on. Ransomware takes over your system until you pay to get it back. And then viruses are the good old viruses that just cause trouble for you. My favorite one was the I Love You virus back in the early 2000s. I remember it well because we were lucky. We did good backups. We had a very paranoid IT guy. And everybody appreciated him more after we were hit. So on the news, it said the I Love You virus. Be careful. Don't open emails with the subject line I Love You. We informed everybody not to do it. However, one guy, I guess, was just feeling lonely and had to open it.
No.
It launched and it basically destroyed every JPEG, GIF, and other similar image on the network. And the company relied upon marketing. So all of the images in the library were gone. And so we had to go scrub the system and then bring everything back down again. Basically shut down the company for a week.
Wow.
A week is a long time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That sounds very destructive.
They're even more vicious these days. Yeah. So with nation state attacks that are on the rise, I mean, there's a cyber war going on, and the cyber battles are quite interesting. Where literally the destruction of commerce in a country is considered a success.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, you're mentioning these hacks, and I mean, it feeds into like companies like Yahoo, Equifax, I mean, even government agencies like the NSA and the CIA. And so with cyber warfare, I mean, like you're saying, it's happening every day and it's very real. And so what are we, or how are we as a country doing in securing our information and, you know, fending off, I guess we refer to them as not bad guys, but black hats, correct?
Right. Yeah. It's back in the 1980s, all the movies showed the black hat hackers as being, you know, good guys. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But now they can, you know, take over, the wastewater treatment plant and cause backups or shut down your power or take over and deny access to your medical records at a hospital. That happens. That's probably one of the top attacks that goes on is locking down records for ransomware. You just don't hear about it. Chicagoland was nailed heavily last year with that. So we as a country, basically, there are a lot of resources that have been there. They're just now more public because news has been talking about it. So I think last year there was a presidential order focused on the area of cyber warfare. I think it came out somewhere around July. Cyber warfare and also how to upgrade the systems within the government to get away from the legacy systems that were wide open. The most vicious systems right now that are out there were actually from the NSA. The NSA got hacked and some of their attack software was compromised and was used by, you know, different organizations and so on and so on and so on. How are we doing it? Basically, they're putting together education framework. There is requirements and legislation going in place to help make it easier to communicate. For instance, right now, it's extremely difficult for any two energy generators to communicate the types of attacks they're under without violating federal law deregulation. So it's quite interesting. So they're even talking about setting up clearinghouses right now. That's legislation that's being worked on, the clearinghouses for information on the types of cyber attacks and the potential damage that can occur. So that in-house security personnel can look at that. The government has always had a cybersecurity group, meaning cyber warfare. We haven't heard about it that much until recently. They're talking about, oh yeah, brand new. No, it's not brand new. It's been there. Cyber warfare is, you know, we're just as involved in it as everybody else. So a lot of things are going on. There is new legislation coming out. You've got multiple organizations for smart grid and public. A lot of it focuses around NIST as being the leadership, but they also touch into all branches. Department of Commerce, the EPA, the Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security are all, and everybody else are all involved in the war, and need to be.
Thank you for joining us today. Be sure to check out part 3 coming to you soon.